Now, Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Good morning, everyone, and a special good morning to Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam & Pearson here on Legally Speaking. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
You have been following along with CFAX, the situation at Tent City. The province will learn the results today of the fire safety compliance inspection. We'll have that result on CFAX as soon as it's made known. What is the situation legally right now? Can it be shut down instantly if it's deemed that fire considerations have not been or requirements have not been met?
That's at least possible. In British Columbia, we have an act called the Fire Services Act. And the Fire Services Act, amongst other things, permits the province to appoint a person who's a fire commissioner. And a fire commissioner is different from the municipal fire chief, this sort of thing. And the fire commissioner for the province of British Columbia and other people that would act as their sort of deputies in local areas, they would do things like collecting information about fires in the province, studying ways to improve fire prevention. But they can also do other things, including issuing orders under one of the sections of the Act that can require a homeowner or occupier of a premises to either repair something which is a fire hazard or to tear down the structure if the thing isn't fixed. And that doesn't require a court application. If you've got Burning Man going in your front yard, the fire commissioner could show up and make an order that you stop that, put it out, and take down the large burning statue on pain of an order that you destroy it. So there is that power under that act. Now, the that has a bit of a history, though, in this case. And you've had comments from Minister Coleman saying that he may go back to court and seek another interim injunction to shut down Tent City if there is a order of that sort under the Fire Services Act that isn't complied with. The interesting little issue, and it comes from an exchange that the Chief Judge set out Chief Justice set out in the original application for an interim injunction in the Tent City case. And the interesting little issue is that there was conflicting evidence before the judge about whether there was in fact a fire safety risk. And there was a opinion offered by Commissioner Anderson, the person I've just referred to under this Fire Services Act, indicating that there may indeed be a risk. Now, on the other hand, there was evidence from a representative of the camp relating what that person indicated was information she received from the deputy fire chief in Victoria. And the representative of the camp indicated that she had met with the deputy chief and was told that the deputy chief was asked for information to establish that there was a serious fire risk so that the province could get the camp shut down. But the deputy chief refused to provide that information, saying that he found that he thought the issue was one of homelessness, not fire risk. That was the other side of the evidence.
Interesting.
And the Chief Justice concluded that, look, there's just a conflict here in terms of whether there's a fire risk. And where there's a conflict on affidavit evidence, just in writing, that can't be resolved. The way to resolve that is to have a trial. And those people could show up at the trial and be cross-examined, and then the judge could make a determination as to whether there was a fire risk or not.
Oh,
so there's
goodness.
A bit of history there.
Wow.
In terms of what's going on with the ceremonial fire and whether other things are going to catch fire in the camp.
But I mean, if there's a true fire risk at the end of the day, because some residents of Tent City assert that this is just a way for the province to be able to justify seeking a new interim injunction to shut it down.
That's right. And that's what seemed to come out in that the original decision on the province's application for the interim injunction. The representative of the camp said that, look, the deputy chief in Victoria was asked for that sort of an opinion to come to that conclusion that the thing had to be shut down and refused it. Justice Hinkson also, interestingly, his decision said that no affidavit was provided by Deputy Fire Chief Carey to clarify the evidence about whether there was a fire safety hazard. So there was this opinion from the commissioner. It was an affidavit form.
Right.
And then there was this secondhand report from the representative of the camp saying that the deputy chief had indicated that that wasn't a problem or it had been addressed. And then nothing was provided by the deputy fire chief. And I thought that was a knowing comment or an important comment.
That if the deputy fire chief thought that it was bad enough, that the fire danger were bad enough, he would have
had some evidence from him. And the fact that that didn't exist in the face of this affidavit saying that he had expressed the opinion that that wasn't a legitimate concern was meaningful to Justice Inkson.
Okay, so this afternoon, Gord Anderson, BC Fire Commissioner, is going to be on CFAX 1070. Where do you see this going in terms of if he comes out and says, I haven't complied, because my understanding is that there's only space for, one of the requirements is that you can only have 70 structures in there, and there are over 100.
Well, he has power under the Fire Services Act to, pursuant to Section 22 of that act, he can, on his own, without going to court, order that the fire hazard be removed or fixed or the premises destroyed. So let's say you had a landlord who had an apartment building that was a fire hazard. You had open flames and no fire detectors, smoke detectors.
Right.
The fire commissioner could make an order under this section saying fix that, and failing a correction of the fire hazard, the building's got to go.
So what, do they rip down 30 tents? And could they do it today?
There's nothing stopping the fire commissioner from doing that under Section 22 of the Act. It would be interesting to see what happens. Is there compliance if he makes that order and issues of enforcement and compliance, and who's going to go down there and, you know, rip down the excess tents or the, you know, dangerous propane tank or whatever the person might conclude is a problem. But the commissioner certainly has the power under that Fire Services Act.
Does anybody
order.
Have the power to counter that order, or is does that order stand?
Well, there would be provision to judicially review administrative decisions of that sort. Any sort of an order made by a government official would be subject to a judicial review in the superior court in the province to make sure that the decision was reasonable and in accordance with the legal requirements.
So we're headed back to court, likely.
That would be my guess. I mean, I don't know if it was clear that the decision was a reasonable one. The response might be to simply remedy the problem rather than litigating it, right? If you had the fire commissioner come and
ripping
say, look,
down the tents.
There's an open flame by the pile of wood, you would expect it to be easier to put the fire out or move the wood than go to court and engage in a review of
sure.
that.
Sure, and I've been told that the fires are out, but that the number of structures has not been adhered to. So that then leads us to the potential for them to say today, you know, these have to go. But then the optics get really bad for the province.
I can also imagine interesting issues. Well, which ones are you selecting? You know, you got a bunch of people. They're not a cohesive group, I imagine. If there are too many lean-to structures and somebody's got to lose their lean-to, I can imagine that being a... an interesting discussion around the ceremonial fire.
Which is now extinguished, I'm told. All right, we're going to take some calls after this, and we're also going to talk about the driver in Constable Beckett's sad crash. Apparently was injured in a rollover crash with police in pursuit. We'll get Michael Mulligan's take on that case as well here on Legally Speaking. Stay with us.
Call us 250-386-1161. Or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. Rain, sun, snow. We get it right with an accurate forecast. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Hey, Canada. Now at Fountain Tire, save up to $200 on a set of four select tires, including Goodyear.
Or receive a mystery prize.
Nope. Save up to $200.
Or, all right, you make a strong case.
It's what I do. Save up to $200 on a new set of tires. That mystery prize is moving.
So you're interested then?
Hurry into Fountain Tire and save big today. Offer ends May 28th.
Tombos, come back here.
From May 20th to the 31st, Volkswagen is offering 0% financing on all certified pre-owned Volkswagen models, like our Jetta, Beetle, and Tiguan. It's the kind of deal that sounds 0% real, but is 100% true. And with the best and largest selection of Volkswagen certified vehicles available, there's 0% reason to go anywhere else. Hurry, because this deal ends in 5 days, and we're 0% kidding about that. Visit your Volkswagen dealer or VW.ca for details. Conditions apply.
Let's talk about your custom project. Active Bobcat and Drains has been providing a personal touch on housing projects for 30 years. They can provide the expertise and service you need, including excavation, drainage, septic work, and more. Active Bobcat guarantees their work and stays till the job is done, period. The owner himself, Dave Rawlinson, will make sure of it. So find out what Dave and the rest of the team can do for you. Get a free quote at activebobcat.com. That's activebobcat.com.
Does this sound familiar?
Honey, it's your turn to clean the bathroom. Honey? Honey?
If cleaning your shower walls is scaring you off, then Island Marble has the solution. They offer groutless designer panels that look like tiles without the maintenance or issues associated with grout. And they're completely mold and mildew resistant. Yet another bathroom innovation from Island Marble. Endless possibilities. Learn more at islandmarble.ca.
22 years in Victoria's Mayfair Shopping Center. So much history, so many love stories, so many happy clients. Lagaro Jewelers have always brought you the best in fine diamond jewelry and watches. The time has come to move Lagaro Jewelers into its own downtown home on 1102 Government Street, and we're counting on you to lighten the load. Everything must go. Save 25 to 70%. Lagaro's moving sale is on now at Mayfair Shopping Center, Victoria. Visit lagaro.com for more details.
My name is Tara, and I work for Sydney All Care Residents. People always ask me, what makes Sydney All Care different? For starters, we're all about care. We offer private rooms. We have our own on-site gourmet chef. We have 24-hour staff, and we always have fun. So what makes us different? At Sydney All Care Residents, we're all about care.
Sydney All Care Residents, privately offering respite, complex, and palliative care. Learn more at allcarecanada.ca.
Home to some of the world's most provocative thinkers and commentators. The TED Radio Hour, Saturdays at 7 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. on CFAX 1070. Bringing you deeper into the story. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam & Pearson. We're going to go to a listener who's on the Pat Bay Highway right now. Apparently, some delays going on there. Good morning. What's your name?
Oh, hi. Good morning. It's Lauka.
Hi. What's going on in the Pat Bay? Whereabouts are you?
So, I just passed it, but between going southbound between Stay Ward and Mount Newton Crossroads, it's pretty much not moving, and it's because they're putting up a sign about highway improvement.
Oh, great.
Yep.
Oh, goodness.
It's moving, but very, very slowly.
So, are you which direction are you headed?
Southbound.
And is it that way in both directions or just southbound?
So, one lane is closed, just southbound, but it's not moving really.
Wow. And are you in a hurry to get to the airport or the ferry? Or?
Nope, nothing.
All right. Well, I thank you for letting me know, because I'm headed to the airport shortly, so I'll put the pedal down. Thanks a lot.
That way is fine. It's just a southbound.
Southbound. Of course it is. Southbound. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling. All right.
So,
yeah. If you're coming in off the ferry, then it could be a little problematic. All right. This is a story that rocked the entire area of Greater Victoria. Well, Canada, indeed. The death of Constable Sarah Beckett in a horrible crash in Langford, and now this has taken a very strange twist, potentially, Michael.
Yes. The media reports are that the individual who was the driver that collided with the Constable Beckett's police car was himself involved in a serious motor vehicle accident rollover, causing him to be hospitalized. The elements of that are going to be very interesting to watch include the fact that there apparently was some police, there may have been a pursuit or a police involvement, at least, with that vehicle prior to the rollover crash. And that's going to lead to a host of questions. in terms of what was going on there. Was the police vehicle, if there was a pursuit prior to this high-speed rollover that's been reported, was that conducted appropriately? Were they aware that this was the individual who was collided with and killed Constable Beckett? The independent office, independent investigations office that looks at police-involved deaths or serious injuries is going to be engaged as a result of that. You can imagine inquiries being made about things like, you know, was the officer, if there was a pursuit of the person, were they aware of the identity of the driver? Had they conducted a check of the license plate of the vehicle? Had it been associated with that individual? And there are police policies in place involving things including pursuits and when they ought to be conducted and when they shouldn't be conducted. If there's a safety hazard, right? You don't want to have police engaged in high-speed pursuits over people for going through stop signs or something, because you're creating a larger hazard than you'd be potentially preventing. So you can expect, if that connection is correct and this is the same individual, there's going to be very careful scrutiny as to what went on there prior to the accident involving the person who collided with and killed the police officer. It may be just completely random, but there would be a reason to at least carefully investigate what went on prior to that accident occurring.
Initial reports, I believe, that the woman involved had said she was driving. We don't know who was actually at the wheel. What about, and again, this is all conjecture, what about if the police are pursuing you, you stop and you pull over? I mean, when does it become the fault of law enforcement pursuing somebody when, in fact, they're pursuing somebody, lights are on, sirens are on, if they, in fact, they were, you pull over?
You're right. And there's plenty of blame to go around if that's what happens and there's an accident that ensues. There's no doubt about it. It's not to eliminate blame that would be squarely on the shoulders of whoever is driving and not stopping for the police. That's clear. But there are police policies in place that don't allow the police to engage in high-speed chases, and I'm not saying that's what was going on here. But you don't want police engaged in high-speed chases through the city in an effort to stop a car because sometimes it produces tragic results. And it's not to minimize the responsibility of the driver, but there are policies that would dictate when that would be an appropriate course of action, as opposed to just radio ahead and have the car pulled over a few intersections ahead by someone else rather than chasing.
I think a lot of people are wondering if this fellow was the driver of the truck that crashed into Constable Sarah Beckett. Why is he out?
Well, the report is that the investigation is still going on into that crash that killed Constable Beckett. And not every accident is something which would result in a criminal charge.
Yeah, we don't know if it's his fault.
It may be that he was faultless in that transaction. It may be that his brakes failed, or it may be that maybe he had a heart attack. I mean, we just don't know what the circumstances were. But most traffic accidents, even fatal ones, don't result in criminal charges. There are all sorts of transactions that occur, even with tragic results, which are sort of in the realm of the civil. Somebody was, careless or should have done something that they didn't do that aren't at the level of a crime where we're arresting people and putting them in jail when there's a car accident.
Do you think that the fact that the Independent Investigation Office is looking into the crash that saw the death of Constable Beckett, would that delay us learning whether or not any charges are going to be laid?
I think only in this way. Just given a case where you've got the death of a police officer, you're going to have an extra reason to be particularly careful and thorough in terms of the investigation. No investigator is going to want to be subject to a legitimate complaint that they failed to make some inquiry or do something which would appear biased in any way. So you can expect a degree of, all these sort of things will be done in a careful way, but you would expect an extra degree of caution to be applied when there's that kind of an investigation. Yeah, you wouldn't want somebody suggesting that the police were, you know, too quick to arrest or charge somebody because a police officer was killed. You would expect there to be just a careful job done.
West Shore RCMP are facing three different investigations into their conduct, which now includes the breaking of a woman's jaw while in custody and not reporting it for over a year. How common is that for one RCMP detachment to be under three independent investigations?
Well, that one that you just mentioned is troubling because of the long delay. There's an obligation to report serious injuries or deaths so that they can be investigated in a timely way. So that one is troubling just on the face of it. The other matters may or may not be issues at all, in fairness, right? It would be appropriate there be a report made so that there can be an independent investigation done into, for example, this rollover accident with the person involved apparently in the other collision. But that's not to say that there was some wrongdoing. You could have the independent office do the investigation and conclude that the police officer involved in that had no idea who the driver was or the passenger was, nothing improper was done, and they're faultless. So I wouldn't come to the conclusion because there's an investigation there's wrongdoing, and the same is to be said about that driver. It may be that he didn't do anything which was criminal or an offense, even though there was a tragic result in the case that killed the police officer.
My understanding is that Saanich was investigating the case of the fatal crash in Langford involving Sarah Beckett, and that they've turned the file over now. What happens next, and when might we actually hear where this is going? If there aren't any criminal charges being filed, will we learn that?
In an ordinary case, no. In the sense that, sort of in the ordinary traffic accident, nobody shows up at a microphone and says, look, I've looked into the accident, and no one committed a crime here. It was just an accident. But given the profile of this case, you would expect there to be some form of press release or announcement when there's a charge approval decision, or if it doesn't get to that stage, a recommendation by the police. Because it's a two-stage process. When the police complete their investigation, they need to make a decision about whether they're going to send a report to Crown recommending a charge, and then it would be for the Crown to decide whether to approve it or not. And given the profile of that case, you would expect if there is a decision not to recommend a charge, that to be announced, and then certainly the Crown's decision.
26th of May now. The accident happened on April 5th. This is still a reasonable timeline?
It is, because some of the things may well include things like an analysis of blood samples. I think there is a report now that the accident reconstruction report has been complete. But if there is an analysis of blood samples to detect drugs or alcohol, that can take a few weeks. And then once that's done, the police would prepare a report, make their recommendation, and then it would be over to Crown to decide what to do.
Brilliant as ever. Thank you for your